So we are now recording, and this is going to be a slightly different seat at the table program. Usually what we do is in seat at the table program, we start with a case, then break up into small teams to discuss the case, and then we come back, and then we record when people come back. This time, we're going to record at the front end, have an overview, and then I'm going to have a question and answer session with Tom Gray. At the conclusion of that, then I'm going to turn the recording off, and then we're going to break you into two groups of three each to discuss what Tom discussed, and maybe to come back with some ideas of how you might implement some of the ideas we've been discussing in your own companies or in your client companies. The topic that we are discussing with Tom today is how can we attract and retain talent under adverse conditions. Barry Coslow mentioned that he got COVID. I think it was during 2021 or maybe
2020. I was an early adopter.
Oh, you were an early, okay. So March 2020, COVID hits, and it is particularly severe, and it is particularly severe for the elderly. The pandemic was impacting everyone in 2020, 2021, and to a lesser degree today. But during the peak, there was no greater concern than in assisted living centers because elderly people are particularly vulnerable to COVID. The question is, how do you attract, how do you retain staff to serve this population? These centers are highly regulated, and that means the chief executive officer has limited discretion to boost compensation to hire and retain staff. Many workers in these organizations, like hospitals, are paid near minimum wage. At the same time, particularly during 2020, 2021, simply showing up for work exposes the staff and their families to potential infection. So it's a time of high stress for those who live and work in assisted living. Tom Grape is in that field. He is the founder, chairman, and CEO of Benchmark Assisted Living. Established in 1997 in Waltham, Massachusetts, a Benchmark is a leading provider of senior living with 64 communities in 7 states. Tom has led Benchmark. He's got more than 6,000 associates. There are $2.5 billion in assets under management, revenues of $550 million. Since April of 2017, Tom has served on the first Governor's Council to address aging in Massachusetts. Tom is the founder and past chairman of the National Assisted Living Association. He received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Massachusetts Assisted Living Association, which he founded in 1990 and is its past chair. Now, during all of this stress and crisis, we're talking about 2020, 2021, Benchmark was named one of the top places to work for 14 straight years by the Boston Globe Annual Employee Survey. Just to put this in perspective, it was only one of two companies to win annually since the inception of the award. Now, it won this coveted honor in 2022 for the work in 2021. This is important because of the year we're discussing. How do you attract, how do you retain employees when they're working under stress and you have limited resources to throw money at them? Benchmark received repeated recognition by Fortune magazine as one of the best workplaces for aging. Benchmark has been consistently recognized by the Boston Business Journal, the Hartford Current, and the Hartford Journal as a top workplace. Benchmark is certified as a great place to work by the Great Place to Work Institute. So that's sort of the overview. So now, Tom, give us a sense of what was going on for you during this time.
Well, back in March, April, and May of 2020, it was total chaos. like everybody probably remembers, the CDC had no idea what was going on. with the pandemic, and the advice was changing on a daily basis about what to do. We were in the right, as you suggested, in the throes of that. We were having cases develop regularly in some of our communities. Other of our communities really weren't experiencing positive cases at all. It really varied widely. We made the decision July, maybe it was June, to close our communities completely to new move-ins, to group activities, to group dining, to really isolate people completely. Very difficult decision. And that meant that families couldn't visit their loved ones. That was traumatic for a lot of folks, as you can imagine.
Sure.
Our associates had a wide range of reactions. Some of them were, as you suggested, afraid to come to work because they didn't want to get the pandemic and didn't want to bring it home with them. On the other hand, others of them were absolutely heroic and literally spent, we had stories of people spending a week on end, sleeping in the community to look after the residents that they cared for so deeply and filling in for shifts for folks who were missing and providing unbelievable loving care to our residents. So it was a wide range of response, but for the most part, it was a heroic response that looked a lot of different ways, but it was a very difficult time, very chaotic time, very uncertain time. And we all remember how difficult that was.
So during this chaos and uncertainty, how did Benchmark support its employees?
Yeah, we made several decisions. We did some basic things, like we provided increased pay for folks who were working during that time. We provided simple things like free meals. So we provided things like transportation assistance to folks who were having who needed extra transportation help, because against a lot of people were, their spouses were now out of work or they had extra burdens on their families and needed extra help. We provided childcare stipends for folks who needed extra childcare. We provided extra flexibility in schedules. We provided mental health support for folks who were watching some of their residents who they cared for either get sick, and we did experience some deaths in those early months. And that was hugely traumatic for our associates. One of the most important things we did was we communicated like mad. We did everything we could to keep our associates informed about what we knew, about what was happening, about giving them avenues to talk about their worries, their fears, their concerns. And that was one of the most important things we did, was we communicated and we listened, both with our residents, with our families, with our associates. And that was a really critical, probably one of the most critical things we worked really hard to do, and that paid big dividends.
When you talk about communications, could you be more specific? What does that mean? Like every day you send out an email to people, or you had a hotline for people? What did you mean by communication?
Yeah, pretty much all of the above. We started with ramping up with our families, for example. We would send letters out every day. If there was a positive case diagnosed in a community, we would send letters out to every family member or resident in that community. So we were sending thousands of letters every day if there was or throughout our communities, if there was an update to provide, and same with our associates, keeping them up informed about whether there was a new positive case diagnosed or whatever, letting everybody know what was happening. We would do town hall calls where I would get on Microsoft Teams or Zoom calls with our associates. We do them weekly. We do it with families. I would be proactively calling regulators and legislators, filling them in on what was going on. They hadn't reached out to us, but we were calling them to keep them informed about what was happening on the front lines. We were definitely sending regular emails to our associates, everything we could, because people were just thirsting for information. They didn't know what was happening. They didn't know what decisions we were making. We were doing everything we could think of to be as openly communicative and transparent as we possibly could.
Tom, you faced a difficult decision to mandate vaccinations, and that wasn't necessarily welcomed by employees. So tell us about how you came to that decision and how did the implementation go?
Yeah. In May of 21, we did decide to mandate vaccines, and that was ahead of ultimately in the summer of 21, later, about 4 months later, the state mandated vaccines for employees in assisted living communities and nursing homes. We did it 4 or 5 months earlier. And it was a difficult decision, but it was one that we basically said to our associates. One of the things we did in our communication was we constantly reinforced our purpose, our company purpose, which we describe as transforming lives through human connection. And we kept also talking about our values. So we kept bringing it back to why people get into this field, reminding them of the noble purpose that that brought a lot of our associates to do this difficult and demanding work, and was a part of why they were performing such heroic tasks. And that's what we talked about when we made the vaccine mandate decision, was the heroic work that they'd done over the previous year really brought us to the decision of requiring a vaccine. This was all about the safety of the residents and the associates and their families. And some folks didn't agree with it. We lost really a very small number of associates. We implemented it in May. We gave everybody to the end of July to get their vaccines. We got to 90% plus compliance within the time period. We had some folks who had medical exemptions. We had some folks who declared religious exemptions. That turned out to be a bit of a loophole that a lot of folks found God in in that period. But people were generally understood, and it took a lot of conversations. We had to sit down with a lot of people and talk them through it and educate people. There were a lot of misinformation out there, as we know, about vaccines. And so we had to do a lot of one-on-one conversations with associates and do more educating. We put together a coronavirus advisory council early on, which has 9 very prominent folks from different backgrounds, a former U.S. Surgeon General, a former U.S. Secretary of Veterans Affairs as a doctor, the president of the American Geriatric Psychiatric Association, some other very prominent doctors and others from different backgrounds. And we did town hall calls with them where they could educate our associates about the vaccine, and then during this period about the vaccine, and debunking some of the myths about it. And that was enormously helpful. So education was a critical part of our vaccine mandate rollout.
So where are you? Has the staff, tell us about how the staff has recovered since the vaccine, since the pandemic, and what's going on now in terms of retention, masks, and all of that stuff?
We're still wearing masks. That's actually a state requirement. We just got back our annual associate survey through the Great Place to Work Institute. And the key measure that they look at is what they call the trust index. Our trust index is up 4 points from the previous year. So again, to your earlier point, I think all the efforts that we put into communicating and some of the things that we did, our associates seem to have reacted positively to during a very demanding couple of years. So we're pleased with the results that we got and feedback throughout that survey in a number of other areas, but we've done pretty well. Staffing is of course very difficult for everyone in this environment, and we're no different. We're having a hard time recruiting staff. I think we're doing better than some of our competitors, but it's still a very difficult staffing environment as it is for everyone.
So Tom, what lessons did you learn during this crisis about managing a large workforce during the crisis?
I learned first of all the importance of talking about our purpose and our values, that again, in our field in particular, we're never going to be paying as much per hour as folks in other fields. We're sometimes not only competing with other folks in senior living, but we're also competing with Walmart and Dunkin' Donuts for some of our hourly workers and the like. But talking about our purpose and our values is really what drew a lot of the people in our field to get into it. And there's some absolute angelic people who are drawn to the caring profession, a nurturing profession. And by reinforcing that, talking about that, which we do all the time anyway, but this during a crisis, to really keep that at the center of people's attention and not let them get distracted by all the other things that are worries, legitimate worries, but to really keep the focus on that was so important, number one. Number two, communication was so critical. There was so much uncertainty, so much worry, not only about what was happening in our communities, but about people going home, what was happening in their lives and their spouses losing their jobs and all the other things that were going on, that the more we could talk to them, tell them what was happening, give us our view, educate them about, again, some of the myths that were out there about the pandemic or the vaccines or whatever, give them a place of where they could be heard and express their concerns and worries was so critical and something we worked very hard to do. And same thing with our regulators and legislators, we got a lot of credit for the fact that we were proactively telling them what was happening when they too were thirsting for information. I think those were really two of the critical lessons that that we learned and I think helped us with our the relationships with all those constituencies.
Great. So at this time, I'd like the rest of you to, if you have any questions for Tom, just unmute yourself and just ask Tom any questions you have. Anybody?
I put a question, this is Babs. I put a question in the chat. It's, how did you engage with families? And did that make any difference with the employees?
We did engage with families. I mentioned earlier that every time there was a positive case diagnosed or early on, if there had been somebody passed away, we sent a letter to every family in that community telling them what had happened. So in the early days, some families would get a letter every day from us giving an update about what was happening in their community. And that earned a lot of credibility. We again would do town hall calls with the families in a given community, offering them the opportunity to ask questions and filling them in on what our plans were and what was happening. And particularly during the very difficult times when they couldn't even visit their loved ones. That was a very difficult, as we can all appreciate. So again, communicating with them was especially important. So we did that. We also had to give our associates a lot of support because during those times when the residents weren't even able to congregate and do group activities, we had to give a lot of creative ideas and our associates came up with a number of things, creative activities where residents could do activities, do them together, but not be in the same place. They do, you know, bingo or something where they'd all stand in the doorway of their apartments. They weren't necessarily within 6 feet of each other, but they could do a group activity or creative other things they came up with, which were some really fun things they did that were still compliant with the infection rules and yet were allowing people to interact and the like during a very difficult time.
That's a good question, Babs. Any other questions, anybody?
Yeah, did people who were taking care of residents who had COVID, did they receive any sort of special hazard pay
Yes.
or other consideration?
Yes, we did offer higher hazard pay, if you will, for folks who were dealing with positive COVID cases, yes.
Tom, now that we're on the other side of just the worst of it, have you guys gone back and changed any of your processes or your onboarding or anything from the learnings from this whole experience?
Yes, we have. We've changed a number of policies. Honestly, before COVID, infection control was not a big focus in assisted living. Skilled nursing, very different. We're not in the skilled nursing business. That's a really licensed healthcare setting. Ours is really less so. Now we've got infection control staff and infection control policies and procedures that we really wasn't in our industry before. So that's one example, and that affects a whole number of things that we do. It does affect our onboarding about how we, both of our new associates as well as of our new families. So yes, it's affected a number of things that we do in a number of ways, absolutely.
To that end, just following on, what's the good that's come out of it? So you've changed some of these processes on some of the learnings. Has there anything on the other side of this that we can say we're now better for it from a big picture standpoint, not just the individual, how we manage it next time?
Well, I'd say, I think one of the questions that people had early on was would older folks or their family members want to have people live in group settings like senior living communities again? And in the early few months, there were a lot of people saying, oh, geez, I don't know if people are ever going to want to move into group buildings like this before. Actually, our demand has never been stronger. We're seeing higher levels of leads, tours, move-ins. And actually, there's evidence that suggests that living in communities like ours is safer than being at home. So that's a interesting outcome that at least a lot of folks who not in our industry would not have expected. I think the reinforcing of our purpose and our values, at least within our company, has been really doubly reinforced. The heroic performance of our associates, if I could show you some of the videos and show you some of the stories, you'd be in tears hearing some of the stories of what our associates did and how self-sacrificing they were to look after the residents that they love and care for so much. And you'd be in tears hearing some of what they did and how heroic they were. And that the confidence that the families have and the love that the families saw for how our associates took care of our residents grew exponentially, seeing how they did this through the most difficult time hopefully we'll ever experience in our lives. So a lot of good came out of this. We certainly have some new policies and procedures that make things safer in some ways should there ever be another pandemic, but some incredibly heartwarming stories, some incredible showing of devotion and care and love that people will never forget has happened that was really at the heart of it all was beautiful.
Thank you for sharing that, Tom.
That's quite an attestation to your employees. I mean, I've heard the word heroic out of your mouth probably a dozen times, and I couldn't agree with you more. Had to have been tough. I find that I learn the most when I make a misstep. I can go back, analyze it. Do you know of any missteps that you want to share? You may not want to share them, but any missteps you made during that whole time that we can all learn from?
I think some of the missteps were not doing things quickly enough. So I wish, and again, this is all new to everybody. So I wish we'd close some of the buildings that were more acutely affected quicker. I wish we'd done the vaccine mandate a little quicker. I wish we'd implemented some of our associate support a little quicker. I wish we'd moved more nimbly, probably by, in some cases, a few weeks or a few days in some instances, but it was all happening. It was happening so fast. I think in general, I don't know that I could name a big strategic mistake that I feel we made, but I think and the things I would say would all be, I wish we'd done some things faster. That would be my response.
Thank you very much. Agility, it's hard to build agility in.
Yeah, particularly first time through something like that.
Absolutely.
Now that you've been through this, as you look to recruit, admittedly in a difficult job market, are there any things that you and your staff are looking for when you're recruiting that says, okay, if we ever have another kind of crisis situation, this is the kind of person I want on the team versus based on our experience, this is the kind of person I don't want to have on the team. Did you get any clues for recruiting?
We've always talked about, and I think maybe this has just been reinforced to a greater degree, about hiring for heart, and we can train for skill. And again, you all will know what I mean, but there are people in our field who are we have three values in our company. One is called to care, one is better together, and one is be the benchmark. And the called to care one is we look for people for whom this is a calling, not just a job. And so hiring for that is the critical thing. So, and there are thousands of our employees for whom they wake up in the morning and they feel that their purpose in life, their reason for being on this earth, is to care and nurture other folks, and in particular seniors. And those are the ones that I, sorry if I overuse the word, but those are the ones that, whose performance has been heroic. And there are others for whom this is just a job. And if they're offered 50 cents or more an hour down the street to go work at Dunkin' Donuts, they'll jump at it. And to the extent we can hire more and more people for whom this is a calling and for whom they wake up in the morning, you know, caring about those residents, and they'll do. We had one of our aides who works at a community, has won several national awards, actually. She's 76 years old, and she postponed her retirement when the pandemic hit because she worried about her residents. And she went in and worked, you know, multiple extra shifts at 76 years old because her residents needed her. I mean, that's just one small example of somebody who's just, who's devoted and has this, who's called to do this. To the extent we can find people who are wired like that, you know, we win all day long. And our residents win. To the extent we find somebody who's going to take the next 50 cents and go down the street, you know, so that's the key lesson.
So Tom, where do you find them? The people with the kid, that lead with the heart, or do they find you? Do you get them out in the pool of the universe? Where do you go to find those people?
Yeah, geez, I wish I'd found the magic spot. They come from all over. They're referrals from our fellow associates, they're referrals from family and others. They hopefully are drawn, a lot of them are drawn to us. If we had the magic place where we could find an unlimited pool, I wouldn't, you know, we'd be in business, we'd be really set. But there are many of them, and they're incredible people. And you have many of them in each of our lives, of course, not everybody's wired that way, and we just need to find as many of them as we possibly can. And they're great gifts when we find them.
That's great, Tom. I really
appreciate it. Tom, just a quick question. What's the turnover for your staff, and what's the kind of turnover in the industry, and how do you compare with the industry and so on?
Our turnover is in the 30s, for 30%, which is higher than we'd like it to be. Our industry turnover is probably in the 60% range. In the skilled nursing industry, it's over 100%. So it's a tough business for turnover. If I could fix that, the communities where we have lower turnover, that provides greater continuity for our residents. If we could, that'd be a magic bullet I'd love to fix. And that again goes back to the same issue of people for whom this is their calling, don't leave. People who, or unless they have a bad manager, which is always an issue, but I'd love to lower the turnover even further.
How long does it take you to decide whether they stay or not? If it's, you know, in my industry, if they stayed more than 5 years, they wouldn't stay forever.
In our industry, the hourly workers, if they stay more than 5 months, they stay forever.
Okay.
It's a very, they stay for a short time. They're usually with us for a long time.
I was curious about costs. A lot of organizations, when the pandemic hit, there were a lot of costs they didn't expect, meaning PPE and all these other things. Were there other things that kind of took you guys by surprise? I know you mentioned covering the food costs. That's still something that is extra. Were there any other things that you or your CFO noticed that, wow, that went up really a lot?
Yeah, we got creamed. We had the biggest cost was the fact that our industry's occupancy went down because we closed our doors for, as I mentioned, for 5 months. So our occupancy declined materially. So our revenue went down, but we were paying for PPE. We were paying for testing costs. We were testing people multiple times a week, both residents and associates. The paying for associate meals was nothing. Of course, we've had rising food costs that are far more dramatic than what the associate meals cost. The incentive pay was a meaningful cost. those are the big ones. But the lost revenue was by far and away the most significant. Fortunately, we have capital partners who never once said, "Are you spending too much?" Every 201, they said, "Do what's right for the residents and associates." And everybody said that. Many of you have experienced in the businesses that you're involved in, you know, all the lenders were, you know, everybody was extending and being held. It was a wonderful cooperative environment for everybody to do the right thing, which was great to experience. But the costs were huge.
Tom, I'm curious about these the employees or associates that have been heroic. I know you can't really do anything financially for them, but did you do something in intangible or other forms of recognition to help secure that, you know, and help them know they were appreciated?
Absolutely. We do many things for cultural. We have a whole series of cultural recognition programs that are on an ongoing basis. So we have awards, service champion awards, we have gratitude grams, we have a variety of things. Each year we have a gala, which is sort of like our version of the Academy Awards for our frontline associates. We have 350 people and we give out awards, and it's great watching some of our frontline associates who've never put on a gown or a tux, have never been to an event like this, and their eyes are as wide as pies when they come into this event, and we give out awards honoring them, and it's great to see. So we do a lot of things to recognize our frontline associates, and we can't do enough, but we work very hard to do that.
Were you able to do galas in person?
No, we were not able to do them in person. We did a virtual gala in 21 for 19. We just did this year a gala we did in March. We did it for 20 and 21. We honored 2 years worth of winners. Great. But some of our other programs we're able to do in the communities, and we're able to do them on site. So we had to modify some of our cultural recognition, but we do them regularly in our newsletters and our so on and so forth. We work very hard to do that.
Great, thanks.
Any other questions?
New York State, excuse me.
Go ahead.
New York State received a lot of criticism for the way they were handling things. Did you have any units in that state? And what did all that cause you about the way they were handling things down there?
We have two communities on Long Island, and the real criticism New York State got was how they didn't accurately report what was happening in nursing homes, and we're not nursing homes. So we were not part of that whole controversy. And New York State, we were fine in New York State. It was really the inaccuracy of their reporting that was the particular controversy that was the biggest issue they had. Unless there's something else you're referring to.
Any other questions? Okay, what I'm gonna do is we're gonna spend 20 minutes. I'm gonna put you in randomly into groups of three. And I want you to use the 20 minutes to get to know your other two participants. Again, part of the value of these programs is to enlarge your network. But use Tom's discussion as kind of a framework to talk about what ideas did you hear today that you're not doing in your companies or that you could suggest either for Monday morning next week or the next time that there's going to be some sort of crisis, and we know there will be some sort of crisis always. So that's the idea. How would you apply some of these ideas in your organizations? I'm going to give you 20 minutes. We're going to break you up into teams of three. And so now I'm going to stop the recording.